Charlie Higson and Friends on Scala Radio. This week with Arabella Weir.
Hello and welcome to Charlie Higson and Friends on Scala Radio. I'm Charlie Higson, and every Sunday night in April, I've been inviting some of my friends to come on the air and talk with me about their favourite music. We started with Paul Whitehouse. Last week, it was the turn of Bob Mortimer. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by my fellow fast show friend, Arabella Weir. How are you, Arabella, if that's not too loaded a question these days?
No, I'm pretty good. I was actually reflecting last night on how lockdown for those of us, let's say, I'm going to be use a broad sweep here, over 50, isn't that different. But it must be very hard on young people who are expecting, you know, lives packed with more than gardening and drinking nice wine. Yes. So things haven't changed that much for me. But
of course, we know how old everybody is now from when they get the jab.
That's
oh, you've
true.
Had it already. I didn't know you were that old. So obviously, Ari Scala. And now, is it all right? You see, I've always called you Ari. Short
yes, I was about to say for the listeners, anybody who ever hears or sees me on a show with anybody, be it from Charlie Higson, Paul Whitehouse, Bob Mortimer, everybody calls me Ari. But if you see me in the street, don't call me Ari because I'll give you a fierce look. So it's the name people use to shorten the rather grand Arabella. But yes, of course, you can call me Ari in this show because it would be odd if you didn't.
Are you sure you're right? You're not going to hit me.
I'm not going to say no. You must call me Lady Weir.
Dame. No. I think Dame Arabella
Dame.
Weir.
That's right. Yes, Mark Williams used to call me Dame Arabella, didn't he? But no, Ari is fine. Of course it is.
So Your Majesty. Obviously, Scala Radio is a classical music station. And that's what we're talking about largely today. Not entirely. You know, in your life, when do you think you were first aware of that there was such a thing as classical music?
Well, for as long as I can remember because as you might guess with a name like mine, both my parents were quite snobby and very highly educated, although my father came from very modest Fife background, but he was a piano virtuoso and his mother was a piano teacher in Dunfermline in Fife, and he was very, very good at the piano. So right from when I was little, my dad would play, and this is one of my choices, my dad would play a lot of Schubert. So it was more that I wasn't aware of anything that wasn't classical music, because my parents certainly never listened to pop or even easy listening, or there might have been a bit of jazz by the time we were in America in the early 60s. But, you know, they were very snobby about music and both very, very interested in opera and, you know, just classical music. So,
Well, I want to pick up on that after. Let's play a piece of music first, because I do want to talk. Is this something we've been talking about through this series of like the idea is, do you need to be posh to listen to classical music? Is it a kind
now.
Of snobby thing? So, no, and I mean, I think it is a really interesting area. So, but you have chosen From the Magic Flute by Mozart, one of Papageno's, is it Papageno?
Papageno,
you see, proper snobs like you know how to say it.
Or Papageno. people who can speak Italian.
Yes. So when would you have heard that then, Arabella?
So I was taken to see the opera of Magic Flute as, wait for it, as if you would need such a thing. And of course, looking back, it probably was a good thing, of being introduced gently to a, in inverted commas, easy opera. So I'd have been about 8 or 9.
Gosh.
But my parents, I think, had already split up, or certainly were in the process of splitting up. But the things that they regarded important as being exposed to was Latin, opera, classical music, obviously not at that stage, fine wines. I'm beginning to sound like Swiss Tony.
Belgian chocolates.
Chocolate.
And the manly smell of a pipe.
Certainly not that.
So do you remember enjoying that when you went to see it?
No, because of course, anything like that when you're 8 is just torture. But the idea of being taken to a panto or a fun play, you know, anything an 8-year-old might actually be able to engage with, was a complete anathema to my parents. But then they were very much that generation of you didn't treat children like children. You treated children like mini adults who needed forming.
You can't wait for them to grow up. You put them in the nursery for 10 years till they're able to have a conversation about
exactly. You ignore them.
But the Magic Flute is one of those kind of considered the sort of a fun opera with lots of magic and fun things happening. But it's still
very colourful.
Quite...
And no, and looking back, of course, I was delighted. I mean, I am delighted that it happened. But also, I realised that I took my kids to see, or rather, their beloved godmother would take them to see things like that. But productions that had been specifically tailored to 8 to 12
well,
year
like
olds.
Shortened because.
Well, and all the fun
quite
arias.
Long,
and,
isn't it, the Magic Flute?
Well, all operas feel long, if you ask me, even though I love opera now. But yes, so I do remember really liking the tunes, if I may. Both my parents are dead, so there'll be no... I can't believe you said tunes! it's an aria, darling.
It is a tune, and to the Italians, going to the opera is like going to see a musical. And it is
exactly.
about the great tunes and so this idea that you have to be sort of educated to somehow understand classical music, I react against because you know I mean in working class communities such as mining communities they you know you would have your brass band and they would play popular songs but they would also play classical songs so people have this music in their lives and around them, and yet they think it's something other.
Yeah, but also, Charlie, have been pricing, you know, the toffs slash the establishment, and I would include my parents in this, sort of, I don't know whether on purpose, but certainly made it a club that you were excluded from, if by nothing else, not your class or your level of education, but the pricing, you know, and then, of course, it became... their club, to which you would not be allowed admittance because you didn't have whatever it was, 200 quid for Glyndebourne or, you know, whatever crazy price it is. But of course, the Italians have always had a better approach to classical music where, you know, you'd get it, as you well know, in public squares. And it's not, it's made for everyone. It's not made to work out whether or not you're a serf.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the music that I first liked listening to, the classical music, and this is something I talked to about with Paul Whitehouse, who described the type of classical music I liked as a boy as crash bang wallop music. And why not? And so I'm going to play now one of my favourite crash bang wallop pieces from when I was a boy that got me into classical music. It's the start of Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto. And it's basically you take both hands and you spread all the fingers and you hit as many notes as you can at the same time. They're like power chords at the start of a great rock song. So let's hear the crash bang wallop opening of Tchaikovsky's first piano concerto. You're listening to Scala Radio with me, Charlie Higson, and my special guest this week, Arabella Weir. On the way next is one of Arabella's choices from Schubert. That was the Scherzo from Schubert's Piano Sonata number 21 in B flat major. And that was a choice of my guest this week on Charlie Higson and Friends, Arabella Weir. And that was a piece you said earlier that your father used to play. So do you remember him playing that?
Vividly. And it sort of brings a tear to my eye because my dad's been dead a long time now. My dad was many things in life and he had been set to be a virtuoso on the piano, but didn't practice enough and anyway became a diplomat and whatever. Mm-hmm. But he was very, very good at the piano and he always used to play that the moment he sat at the piano. That would be the first thing he played and he'd never get to the end of it. But so whenever I hear that, and we played it at my dad's funeral and his memorial, and it's just Well, I love Schubert, and you know, and I love that particularly because I cannot even hear the first couple of bars without thinking of my dad.
Mm. Well, I mean, and it is technically that's a very complex piece. So, do you think he regretted that he didn't take that route?
No, I think he. My dad was incredibly competitive and incredibly hard on himself. So I think what he mainly minded was that he didn't spend 6 hours a day practicing, as well as being a leading Arabist, as well as doing a very successful job as a diplomat.
How did your parents react? And it's the classic question that actors get asked when you said you wanted to be an actor.
Well, my mother said all actors are morons apart from Michael Horden. And my father said,
why Michael Horden?
I don't know. So that was her sort of, you know, that was her favourite actor at the time.
But in your experience, do you think she was right?
Well, it's turned out she wasn't far off the mark, but my mother had, as an academic, had absolutely no experience of actors. And my dad was certainly gave me the feeling that he was mainly disappointed in everything I did and all my choices anyway. So he just said, oh, it'll be very competitive. And used to ask me every time he saw me until I had some modicum of success, surely it's time for you to give up now. don't you want to make a living, darling?
Yeah. But actors probably ask themselves that every day, don't they?
There is a moment. You keep thinking there's a moment when you'll know it's time to give up. Just as you well know, Charlie, you keep thinking once you have started earning a living and what people outside our business would call once you've made it, thinking, surely I've got to feel like I'm successful now. Surely this has got to feel like this is it. And of course, certainly.
For me, I find it's only really in retrospect you think, oh gosh, that was quite successful.
Exactly.
I was doing quite well then.
I know, yeah. And that's exactly what you feel, isn't it? You look, people go, oh my God, you were in that. And when there's some young, sort of in their early 30s, female comedians said to me, oh my God, you're a benchmark for us. And I thought, me? How do you even know who I am?
It's always been my ambition to be a benchmark.
Benchmark, yeah. They might not said, I think I was just trying to be modest. What one of them actually said was, you're a ledge.
A ledge.
I think she meant legend rather than a ledge on which to be left.
Yeah, to throw yourself off.
Yes, and I, of course, never learned to play the piano at all. So, yeah.
Talking, Arabella, of things that you were in.
That is The French Lieutenant's Woman, starring Meryl Streep.
Yes.
And now, me, obviously.
Well, and you, yes. And I believe that on the back of doing that film with Meryl Streep, she was so impressed by your performance that she asked you to become her child's nanny.
Yes. See, she just, I think, Charlie, although if I were ever to write a memoir, it would be called I Was Nearly Meryl Streep's Nanny. The film's director, Carol Rice, was my sort of, is the word ersatz? This is a classical music show. Surrogate father, really. And so I had much more access to Meryl Streep than I would have done playing the part if I'd just been, as it were, a jobbing actress. I'm playing the girl on the undercliff.
The girl on the undercliff.
Well, there's a scene with a kind of cavorting, buxom milkmaid type and her boyfriend that Meryl Streep and Jeremy Irons see. But you're not actually, we're on the undercliff and they're there at the overcliff, I suppose.
Right.
And we're behaving very much in the way that Jeremy and Meryl are not. So we're being all saucy and sexy and they're being all stiff upper lip and Victorian-y in that moment. But of course, because of being Carol's sort of surrogate daughter, I had much more access to Meryl. And when she came back to Britain a couple of years later to do another film, she said, she by this time had a couple of kids and said to Carol and his wife, Betsy, can Ari be my nanny? And they said, no, she's a proper actress now, which wasn't true. I'd have loved to be her nanny. So I don't think I ever knew the score until the movie was out, but I had a wonderful, wonderful time. Of course, that was my second ever job and an introduction to movies that aren't, you know, everyone called the director sir and, you know, the star ate in a kind of special place. It was all very, old school Hollywood.
Well, while we're talking about films, this is a good opportunity to remind you, our listeners, about Mark Kermode's film music show, which was on yesterday. You can hear it again by using the Scala Radio app or listening online at scalaradio.co.uk. Ari, you said before that you don't think that was the doomiest piece of music. What do you think is the doomiest?
What that I've been in?
Yes.
I did in the days when they did these brilliant, brilliant, incredibly expensive costume drama, I was in something called No Country for Old Men, not the movie, but with Trevor Howard playing, Jonathan Swift of Gulliver's Travels. And that had some very doomy music.
As a TV piece, was that?
Yeah, it was a BBC TV production, you know, in the days when, you know, Jonathan Powell, or Pearl, as I believe you're supposed to say, and all those kind of great old toffs did those shows.
Did Trevor Howard ask you to become a nanny of any kind?
No, he didn't, because, and I don't think this is slander because he's long dead, but he was pretty, my mother would say, three sheets to the wind most of the time. And I believe that was an issue for him. Mm. So no, he didn't. And I'm not even sure he had any kids. But no, that's the only production on which I've been asked to be someone's staff member.
I mean, the extraordinary thing about Trevor Howard, and actually, while we're talking about films and music, I think one of the films which is most closely associated with a classical piece would be
Brief Encounter
with the amazing Rachmaninoff that Trevor Howard is in that. And it's extraordinary to think, when you see that film, I think he was only 32. He looks about 60.
Yes, but in those days, that was the aspiration. If you were, you couldn't wait to be an important old person. So yes, old, didn't you?
Yeah, as a kid, you would have worn a suit. And when you got a bit older, you could progress from wearing a cap to wearing a hat to show that you were properly a man.
You're not that old, Charlie.
I do wear hats and caps, though. I think it's important.
I've seen you in many.
So this is Charlie Hickson and Friends on Scala Radio, and I'm here today with my old friend, very old friend. We might talk in a minute about how we met, Arabella Weir, who is sharing some music with me. And now this next track, Arabella, you've chosen, it's another piano piece, this time a piano concerto. It's Mozart's Piano Concerto number 21, the Andante. And when we were putting the show together, you said you liked the track because it was a good track to chill out to.
Yeah. Mozart is what, you know, music snobs like my dad would have thought as easy listening, hence being taken to Magic Flute as a child instead of, you know, the Ring Cycle. Mm. And my dad, very much as he was with wine, thought, you know, you'd have to train your ears. So you'd start on easy, you know, basically if it was easy to listen to, it wasn't worthy of him. Not that he didn't like Mozart, but, you know, Mozart is pretty likeable the moment you hear it. It's not complicated. I mean, you know,
there's not much Sturm und Drang, I think the German phrase is, that sort of very heavy. Well, there's not a lot of crash bang wallop.
There's
lots of heavy emotions. It's all, yes, it is often used in scenes where you'll have a string quartet at a cocktail party tinkering away.
Right. Or for example, you could imagine making a Hovis commercial using a bit of Mozart. Not that it is Mozart in that, but yes, this is uncomplicated music for me to listen to, I would say.
Well, let's listen to it. Mozart's Piano Concerto number 21, the Andante. And that is a track that my guest this week on Charlie Higson and Friends, Arabella Weir, has chosen as something uncomplicated that is good to relax to. And it's quite interesting the way that so much classical music is being sort of packaged and sold, particularly to younger people, as chill out music. You can get so many classical chill out compilation albums. And why not, if that's a way to get into it?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I have, as they've grown up, played my kids bits of classical music. I don't think either of them have taken to it on, but they'll probably make up the fabric of their background, you know, of who they are as they get older. But I don't think, I mean, Mozart is, you know, very easy to listen to and very tuneful. I think that's why sort of classical music snobs look down at it, because of course it's got a tune, and much like a successful pop song, you know, which of course he was of his day, he was a pop star of his day, it, you can remember the tune pretty quickly.
I mean, you keep saying that Mozart is looked down on by classical music snobs, but I think most of your sort of classical music experts would put him certainly in the top five, if not, he often would be number one as the greatest classical composer of all time.
Yes.
Particularly, you know, nowadays we lump classical music together as one big thing, but it wasn't, and it changed all the time. And he was revolutionary in how he advanced the music and changed it and brought it forward. And funnily enough, so for, you see, my dad didn't listen to a lot of classical music growing up. He got into it later on, and he got into it through the more obviously, I suppose, romantic stuff or the big sort of Beethoven stuff. But as he got older, he said he started to listen to something like Mozart more, because it wasn't constantly asking you to have a huge emotional reaction to it. You could just have it, I suppose, use it in a more contemplative way.
Maybe Mozart would shoot us, or classical music snobs would shoot us for saying this, but you can have it on in the background and be doing, you could actually read a book while listening to a Mozart concerto. I challenge you to do that listening to Wagner.
Well, you see, when I'm writing, I listen to Wagner a lot.
Yes,
because you can put on an opera at like 10 in the morning and it will take you through the whole day. They last so long, and it's kind of there as just this kind of energy and
I can't do anything else and listen to opera, but maybe I've got a finer brain, Charlie, but I actually, it's also because I'm more of a show off than you, so I like singing the arias as it, I mean I like a nice rousing opera while I'm sort of doing a big clean or gardening or something.
You're with me, Charlie Higson, and my friend Arabella Weir, and we're choosing some of our favourite pieces of music to play for you this evening. On the way next, the Sky Boat Song, and that's from the soundtrack to the romantic TV series Outlander, about a woman who travels back in time and falls in love with a sort of rugged Scotsman. Now, the reason I've played that is because, Arabella, you were talking earlier about that your grandmother played the piano, and you had said when we were talking about the show beforehand that one of your memories is her playing the Sky Boat Song. We don't have a recording of her playing it, which is why we use that version. So you said she was a pianist as well?
Yes. Well, my father's mother was a pianist and she taught piano, but my other granny was my boarder's granny was a, like many women of that generation, just taught to play the piano, and she'd play it in church and play it for me and sing the Sky Boat Song. It's funny, when I shoot the series that you know I'm in, Two Doors Down, in Glasgow, often on the next set is Outlanders, and they call it Game of Kilts in Scotland because it's pretty much a derivation of Game of Thrones, but all set in the same sort of period in swashbuckling Scotland. So they call it Game of Kilts. And my granny, that granny, who we called Granny Shishi, her name was Sheila, was a devout Christian. And as I say, played the organ in church, St. Cuthbert's in Melrose, but she also played the piano. And she was probably the only figure of what I think is the absolute cornerstone of parenting. She's probably the only elder I had in my life who gave me unconditional love. So that my parents were very fierce and not particularly loving. And that granny was very, very loving and used. So being with her, every time I was with her on a visit, she would play that every day for me and we'd sing together. And I just love it. And that she was a very big influence in my life and a wonderful, wonderful woman.
Oh, well, that's lovely. I mean, it is a shame we couldn't have had a version of her playing on the piano. That would have been lovely. One of my grannies was Irish, but she came over and married an Englishman, and he was very strict and old fashioned. One of my aunts, for instance, really wanted to be an actress, and he just banned her. He said, you cannot, no. She became a nurse instead. And my granny, she loved to play the piano. They had a piano in the house, and she would play it in the afternoons. But the kids would have to keep a lookout, because if they saw the dad coming home, it was like, quick, mum, stop. She'd have to stop playing the piano and put the lid down. She wasn't allowed to play the piano. They had a piano because it looked posh, but she wasn't allowed to play it. So
nobody,
it's really
played
sad.
It.
No. Well, she did. She played it when he was out at work. So
the subjugation of women and the forms it's taken. I mean, imagine having a piano that you weren't allowed to play when I'm not here, and you're not allowed to, because that would look like you were having fun.
Yeah, I think possibly they were. She was allowed to play when he was around if it was like
for company,
a hymn or something like that. And he classically loved listening to marching brass band music.
But
no, it was really interesting, you know, that all of his children, and you know, he had 8 children, were all forced into quite conventional roles in life, but these things sort of pop out later on. Arabella, I asked if you had a track that you'd like to share with the world, and you've chosen "I Have a Bonnet Trimmed with Blue."
I have a bonnet trimmed with blue. Do you wear it? Yes, I do. I will wear it when I can. Going to the ball with my young man. Makes me laugh every time.
I almost feel we don't need to play the version.
No, you definitely need to play it. But that was a pretty good rendition.
That, it was. I mean, is this a piece from your childhood? Did you ever actually live in Scotland?
No, never lived there. Born in America, brought up there. But how's this? Because my parents were so incredibly patriotic and determined that their children should never think of themselves as English. So Dad was working abroad my entire childhood until they split up. But when we came back to Britain, we'd fly to London and go straight to Scotland. So I'd never been to England until my parents split up. And my mother decided to live in London and not go back to live in Scotland. And my parents once caught me saying in the Middle East to someone said, "Where are you? Are you American?" Because we all had American accents because we'd come from, you know, that Dad had been posted to Washington. And I said, "Oh, I'm English." And my dad flew and he said, "You're not English. Never say you're English. You're Scottish."
Did he have a full-on English accent though?
Yeah, but then because I went to American school in America, then French school in Cairo, and I didn't go to an English school, and then French school when we came to London, and I didn't go to an English school until I was 11.
But your father's accent.
Ah, but my father was a lower middle class fifer from Dunfermline, and when he joined the Air Force from which he was recruited to the Foreign Office, he was not only overweight, as he was then, giving birth to his fear of fat people and his bullying of me, but he was the only person with a regional accent who hadn't been at Eton. So he quickly learnt that if you wanted to make it in the Foreign Office, you didn't go, "Here, fancy a cup of tea, eh, Michael?" So my father, but try as he might, he couldn't say food or foot. So he'd say, "Will you get your foot? Will you get your foot off the table? I'm not going to give you any food." He just, but otherwise, yes, my father's accent, as you will remember, you could cut glass with it. And my mother was posh Scot. So, but ironically, their parents all had Scottish accents, but then my mother had been sent to a posh school.
So I Have a Bonnet Trimmed with Blue. Was this something that you all sang around the piano out in Egypt to remind you of home?
No, Mum would play it a lot.
Right.
On the gramophone. And we'd all do that as a joke. You know, "I have a bonnet trimmed," because there's that sort of that very 40s. My mother absolutely loved it.
And you have something of a love for that sort of brisk, Scottish, unsentimental kind of Calvinistic.
Yes. Well, all that music, Skyboat Song, all those, you know, Highland ditties, which that is, that's an original, I think it's 18th century Highland song. They all remind me of my childhood, and my parents were fiercely patriotic Scots. And even though we were by this time living in London, everything had to be, you know, Scotland the Brave, and, you know, all the music, all contemporary music like that had to be Scottish. And of course, I had such a lovely time. As I said, the granny from the Borders was the only one who gave me unconditional love. Mm. So every time I hear that music, I also think of the time being with that granny, which was hugely formative, because, you know, my parents really weren't very nice to me at all. And she was always, always nice to me.
You keep saying that your parents weren't very nice to you at all, and implying that you had a miserable childhood. And I'm not saying you didn't, but you're choosing a lot of music to take you back to there, and saying you love listening to it because it reminds you of your childhood. That's an interesting thing.
I think I not only made peace with my parents, no small thanks to therapy, but the times that music was present in our lives were the nice times. So they were very neglectful and not very loving. But for example, when I was taken to see the Magic Flute, or when Dad would play the Schubert, it was reminiscent of the nice times. And the few nice family holidays we had in Scotland, the soundtrack was always, you know, that music. So it's reminiscent of the snapshots of the good times of my childhood, which were few and far between.
I'm Charlie Higson, and you're listening to me, Colin Hunt, and my friend Doreen on Scala Radio. Actually, I might talk about that. Doreen went through a number of name changes, but yes, Doreen, as played by Arabella Weir, here on Scala Radio.
This episode of Charlie Higson and Friends featured a clip of Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1, performed by Alexandra Dariescu and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, followed by Schubert's Piano Sonata No. 21, played by Clear Williams. Both extracts are taken from albums released on Signum Records and are available to buy at signumrecords.com. A little later, we heard a bit of Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 21, starring Yol Iam Sun and the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. That's available on Onyx Records. Find out more at onyxclassics.com. In episode 2 of Arabella Weir's podcast, Charlie and Arabella reminisce about Colin Hunt and Maureen, or was it Doreen? As well as revealing their favourite fast show double act. The Charlie Higson and Friends podcasts were originally broadcast as a series on Scala Radio in April 2021. Scala Radio is a classical music and entertainment station, home to Angelica Bell, Simon Mayo, Mark Hermode, Penny Smith, and me, Charles Nove. Why not join me for breakfast, weekday mornings between 7 and 10? It would be lovely to see you. Scala Radio broadcasts across the UK on DAB Digital Radio, Smart Speaker, Sky TV Channel 0216, the Scala Radio app, and online at scalaradio.co.uk.